We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, everybody. The Pacers snapped their 7-game losing streak, taking down the Chicago Bulls 116-110. Unfortunately, Mike Focci not here to recap that game with me, but have no fear, we got a podcast coming out for you talking all things NBA. Yeah, we got Dan Favalli from Bleacher Report going to be talking all NBA. We're going to be talking All-Star Game, and we're going to be doing our mid-season awards right now. So it's a little bit past the halfway point, but thought it'd be a great time to check in with Dan, get his thoughts on things, and we talk a lot about the Indiana Pacers, as well as some other teams and other players in the NBA, but spend a lot of time talking about the Pacers here, and then we're going to have our Fan of the Week on. So no Focci today. The Rui Hachimura trade really upset him. That was one of his favorite players on the Wizards. So he had to recoup today, could not make the episode. But we're going to take a quick break right here, and we're going to bring in Dan Favalli. But I just wanted to mention the Pacers picked up a big victory over the Chicago Bulls, snapping that 7-game losing streak, thanks to Benedict Mathurin and Miles Turner's 26 points, and T.J. McConnell getting 20 points and 10 assists off the bench. So great stuff from the Pacers there. Super happy to see them get the victory. Now, let's bring on Dan Favalli.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Look, setting the pace with Alex and Focci. Alex and Focci. Alex and Alex. If I put Ajax in the paint, how you gonna stop me? How you gonna stop me? How we can go head to head. Call out your top three. Call out your top three. Look at the switch from Dorte. Swish. Now that boy got three. Swish, swish. We got Haliburton running point. This is the Benedict for the shot. If anybody gonna come in the post, then we got Jalen Smith for the block. Setting the pace, going to the top. Setting the pace, going to the top. This is your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gonna need a mop. Smooth.
What is going on, Pacer Nation? Welcome back to another episode here of Setting the Pace, and I'm joined today, he works for Bleacher Report and has a great podcast, the Hardwood Knox podcast. It's Dan Favalli. Dan, thanks so much for joining, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Alex? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm doing great, man, and you know, it's trade season heavy, and originally I had asked you to come on to kind of talk about that, but I thought, let's pivot a little bit, because there's been so much trade talk on this podcast with all the rumors surrounding Miles Turner and what could happen there with his extension. And then, of course, all the times that we've been mentioned by reports of players we're interested in. But today, I wanted to talk a little bit of mid-season awards, where we're at with that, All-NBA, and then, of course, the All-Star roster. So I guess we could start things off with the All-Star rosters after last night's news coming out that they will be picking the players the day of the game. So what are your thoughts on that? And then we'll get into some All-Star conversation.
Yeah, that's a home run from my perspective. I'm interested to see like what the setup is. Like, the player is gonna be like, I'm assuming they'll be just like by each other. So I'm all for, if we could have seen that happen live, what happened, the whole Kevin Durant and James Harden situation last year when LeBron was essentially daring KD to end up with James Harden on his team. I would have absolutely have loved to have just seen that in the moment on site with the players. And so I think this is a home run idea. I'm just very interested to see like what the execution ends up being for it though.
Right. That's kind of my thinking. I'm excited for the idea, just not sure how it's going to all play out, because I do love the TNT broadcast, you know, kind of helping guide that draft along as well with their input, because those guys crack me up. But so right now, it looks like, based on the third returns, it looks like LeBron James is leading the Western Conference in votes. And I believe Giannis jumped Kevin Durant on the last returns, if that's the fan votes, if I'm not mistaken. So it'll be interesting to see who gets in there. But we'll start things off here first with the Eastern Conference. I'm just curious, who is your starting five for the Eastern All-Stars?
So my own personal starting five would be, in the backcourt, Tyrese Haliburton and Donovan Mitchell, both who have been outstanding. And I think, you know, you can start to quibble over minutes played, but the voting essentially closed up before Tyrese Haliburton's injuries. And I think also it's kind of reinforced how valuable he is to the Pacers, that they've sort of sucked without him. Mitchell was an easy inclusion, had to be there. And then the front court was obviously tough, having Giannis, Tatum, and Embiid, and Kevin Durant. But like, you can only have, you know, three of those four start. I went back and forth a lot, and I don't feel great about this decision, but I think Giannis is probably the one that I would have coming off of the reserves. I just feel like he's been excellent defensively this year, but it just feels like you don't sense him, or he doesn't leave as much of an offensive imprint in a good way as he typically does. And that might just be splitting hairs, but KD's been fantastic before his injuries, just otherworldly. Jason Tatum's been great at both ends of the floor as well, and the fact that he has counters to his jump shot not falling now is big. And Joel Embiid has just been absolutely dominant on the offensive end. So I don't think you can necessarily go wrong picking three of those four, but that's just where I sort of landed for now.
Right, and I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's a tough call. I don't know who's going to end up being the last man out. Right now, based on the fan voting, would be Joel Embiid, as Giannis, KD, and Jason Tatum are leading the votes, but that's only one side of it. So we'll have to see how the media votes and stuff like that, and the players vote. But you brought up Tyrese Haliburton as a starter there with Donovan Mitchell, and I think he probably was your fifth starter out of that group right there for who your starting five would be. Obviously, this is a Pacers podcast, so that makes us really excited to hear about Tyrese. But in terms of just like all-star voting, do you really like the backcourt, front court, or do you wish it was just the five best players from the conference get the ability to start?
Yeah, I mean, I would just prefer it like straight out at this point. Also, if we're not going to do actual conference teams, I just want to see pick the 24 best players in the league. And that's who makes the all-star game. And so it's always preferential, especially this doesn't bug me as much because it's all, you know, it's an exhibition. And I do think at least there's some flexibility with backcourt versus frontcourt. I hate that all NBA still uses like positional designations. I think that's just a swing and a miss by the league currently.
Well, I definitely, and I think the way that it impacts contracts as well, that's another thing that is just silly in my opinion. Like, it's just people's opinions on votes, and we know that we've seen the returns on some of these votes, and it's kind of embarrassing sometimes who these media people vote for. Now, a lot of guys take it seriously on who they vote for, but there are some that you're just kind of like, who gave this person a vote? That's kind of an outlandish vote there. But so there we go. We got your starting five there for the Eastern Conference. So we're going Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Haliburton, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Kevin Durant. Giannis is your first sub, so let's build out the rest of this. Who are the remaining players on your roster for the Eastern Conference?
So looking at splitting it into the actual positions, this was tough. Guard, I have Jaylen Brown, assuming that he would be eligible there. And then I actually have James Harden as my guard, who's just been, I think, quietly spectacular this season when he's been healthy as both a passer and an efficient three-point shooter, and not the same player, but can still just be really dominant and has done a good job of deferring to Joel Embiid for stretches. I also just can't bring myself to include someone like Kyrie Irving based off everything that has happened this season. I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm sure most people would have him in there. And the three final front court spots, Giannis is one. Then I have Giannis Antetokounmpo and Bam Adebayo, who I think has been verging on quietly dominant this season, like kind of having a career year. And I think he just receives too much flack because people don't like his shot selection. He doesn't shoot threes yet. He really can't be the number one option on the offensive team, but he is scoring efficiently again. And he's been, you know, a defensive monster for one of the best defensive teams in the league. The passing is still there. The versatility is still there. The counting stats are all still there. And so I'm surprised that he hasn't gotten, even when you look at the other names that you can consider, I am surprised that he hasn't gotten more love. And then my wild cards, I think this is going to piss off probably Knicks fans more than anybody, but I have DeMar DeRozan and Jimmy Butler. Butler's been spectacular on really both ends, but the level of defense that he continues to play at all these years later really continues to astound me. And he's just so valuable as the driving force of an offense when he gets going downhill, ability to draw fouls, hit some difficult jumpers, but also just finish around the basket. And then DeMar DeRozan just, I mean, you talk about this steadying offensive explosive force and who can also orchestrate for your entire offense. People can still quibble over, well, does he take too many mid-rangers? I think he's someone who scores efficiently enough from there. It's okay. You want him to shoot a better clip on threes or take more threes in general. The defense isn't great. But just from someone who has to be the maestro for everything that Chicago does, and really just the even-keeled nature and the reliability he brings you in crunch time, where he is still unpredictable, has this clutch win probability added metric. He led it in the league last year by a wide margin, and he's doing it again this season. And that's why we know guys like Luka and De'Aaron Fox have been just lights out in those stretches, for even Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in those high-leverage situations. And so Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, two honorable mentions there for me, but I think I just, at this point, if you're going to ask me to choose between those two plus Bam, Jimmy Butler, and DeMar DeRozan, I'm going to go with the three I just named.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really go wrong with that. Now, when you were saying your forwards, I might have misheard you, but I think you said Giannis twice. Did you mean Pascal Siakam?
Yeah, so I have Siakam, Giannis, and Bam as my forwards. Gotcha. We're front court guys, however you want to phrase that.
Right, I mean, I figured Pascal would make it. I mean, Pascal's having an amazing year. And, you know, he's just been really good, even though the Raptors have struggled this year, which has been kind of a downer, because I really was expecting them to have a really good season after last year. And I don't know, they just don't really seem to be clicking. And I'm not sure what's going to happen with their roster. That's obviously a big question mark, but I really can't disagree with anything there. I think it's kind of slim pickings once you get to that wild card spot. And I don't know if this is how you feel, or maybe it's why you kind of like went towards it, but it does feel a lot like there's that respect factor of like guys that have previously been all-stars. And that's why I could see that happening. But Trae Young, I don't believe you mentioned him at all for your roster. Was there any reason why Trae Young wasn't a candidate for that?
Yeah, he was bad for a good part of the year by his standards. He's starting to play a lot better now. And also, like, insofar as people factor in off-court stuff, but just someone who is really seems to maybe be submarining the culture and camaraderie of that team. Like, there has to be some level of legitimacy to the reports that we've heard, because we've just heard them so many times over again. And that, coupled with his play and his, you know, stylistically, it hasn't changed that much. And is that a function of him, or is that a function of the way Nate McMillan's coaching the roster? I don't know. It's probably a combination of the two, but he wasn't even, like, I looked at guys, as I said, Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, even Kristaps Porzingis for wild card spots before I would have added in Trae Young.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, Trae Young is obviously just a popular name. He's fifth in the fan voting right now. So LaMelo Ball is also involved in that, as well as Derrick Rose and Darius Garland. So, you know, Derrick Rose should not be anywhere near the all-star votes, but he's got a big fan base, so that's good for him. But no love for a rookie Paolo Banchero at all?
No, I just don't think he's there yet. He's been spectacular and the runaway rookie of the year favorite, but I wouldn't put him in like the all-star level yet. To have to beat out someone like if we're talking wild card spots, like a Jalen Brunson or a Julius Randle at this point, like, that's asking a lot of him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm just going off names that were popular votes among the fans. So let's move over now to the Western Conference, the guards here, where I think this can be a little bit interesting, because there's a lot of good guards in the Western Conference, specifically the top four on the fan votes, but I'm curious who you have.
Yeah, so I wish that I could fudge with the positions and have Luka as a forward, because I feel like that would make this exercise a lot easier. But I have Luka at guard, and I have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at guard, with my front court starting spots as LeBron, Larry Markkanen, and Nikola Jokic. I mean, look, this isn't Markkanen's been great. LeBron's been great as well. But like, you talk about a list that has been influenced by injuries, looking at how much time Zion has missed and how much time Anthony Davis has missed. Like, those are two guys that seemed like shoe-ins to make the all-star roster. And then trying to figure out whether to go with LeBron and Markkanen, like Sabonis coming down to that last starting spot, maybe he should be in there over Markkanen or LeBron. I think that's a fair discussion to have.
Yeah, I mean, I think Markkanen, I mean, he's having an amazing year, and I have no problem with him getting the nod. I would say that maybe the Sabonis love comes from the media, because the Kings are in third place right now. I don't know if that's just me thinking out loud correctly or incorrectly, but, you know, it's just when you look at two different rosters, like, you know, Sabonis is sharing the ball quite a bit, but he does kind of like he did with the Pacers. Offense runs through him, and Markkanen has been such a bright story, but he's been so good. And, you know, the Jazz, they're not at the third seed, but they're still in the mix for the playoffs. So, and nobody expected that to happen. So I just wonder if you think maybe that Sabonis might get more love from like player votes and media votes because of how well the Kings have played this year.
Certainly from the media. And it's not that he doesn't even deserve it. It's just when you look at Lowry, he's been so efficient. Like he's shooting like 60% or something ridiculous on twos this year. And there's something too, as you mentioned, the offense in Sacramento runs through Sabonis, and that's big time. Like not every player can handle that. And like, he is very much just sort of the life force of what the Kings were able to do. At the same time, there's like a scalability to Lowry Markkanen where he's opened up all sorts of different lineup combinations for Utah. And I think he's probably been better defensively just like last year than people expected. Sabonis has had his moments, of course, too, as I think he's been a better rim protector overall for the Kings this year, even though their defense hasn't been great than many people would have expected. It's just really splitting hairs. And I thought Sabonis was going to be kind of a no-brainer starting nod when the injuries to KD and Zion happened, but just the way LeBron has played basically since Anthony Davis went down, but also since he turned 38, has been like out of this world. And then Jokic is obviously like that. That's just an inarguable spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, those two, I feel like, are total locks. It's just that final front court spot. I think it's up for debate. You know, for a while there, I was thinking Zion might make it. And then, like you said, once he went down, I was like, okay, Sabonis. It's Markkanen, I think, for a lot of people, it's just so like weird to see him playing like this level. And I think a lot of people aren't paying attention to Utah. So it's kind of like, you know, you're not really thinking about it. You know, you hear about it on the podcast, but you don't realize how efficient and terrific he's been. So I like it. I have no problem with that. I'm curious now, who are your reserves?
So Steph, I have it as one of my two guard reserves, and he probably would have had a case to start over Shea if just, I mean, Shea has like 450 minutes on him right now. And that stuff kind of matters to me. John Morant is my other guard. Then for my front court, three front court spots, I have Anthony Davis, Sabonis, and Zion. I don't want to say that the front court well in the West is super shallow, but it's shallow enough to where like the time Zion and Davis has missed just was, I didn't even think twice about ensuring they'd be on the All-Star team. Mm-hmm. And then Sabonis, it wouldn't shock me if he's starting. So like him, Markkanen, and LeBron are all going to make it. And then my two wild card spots went to Damian Lillard, who I think if you really wanted to, you could say is like a toss up if you care about the wild card designation versus the actual guard between him and John Morant. And the final spot, definitely tough. I ended up just sort of defaulting to Paul George here. I thought about giving it to De'Aaron Fox, could certainly deserve it. I even gave some consideration to Draymond Green here as well. I think Booker's probably missed too much time at this point for me to get him there. But that was, Booker was the toughest cut for me. But I ended up just going with Paul George because you look at the playing time is just going to be like a tiebreaker for me. And you have Paul George like at basically 1,200 minutes versus Devin Booker at 1,000. There's a little bit of a difference there. But those were certainly like the two hardest delineations to make. And I'm not sure how much I was caking in the fact that Devin Booker is going to continue to miss more time as we lead into the All-Star break.
Yeah, and that's a fair point. I mean, because I was thinking, okay, Devin Booker's probably a wild card when I was listening to your list in my head, and I'm kind of trying to predict what you were going to do. And then when you said it was Paul George, I was a little bit surprised. Now, if it wasn't Devin Booker, I thought it might be De'Aaron Fox as that wild card because I just love what De'Aaron Fox has done with the Kings. I think they've been fantastic this year. And, you know, it'd just be kind of cool to see two Kings in the All-Star game. But for me personally, I agree with everything. I would have probably just changed Paul George to De'Aaron Fox and Dame Lillard to Devin Booker just because the Blazers have really, you know, I mean, I hate that I do that, but I do a lot of times look at records when I'm doing this, and I like to reward players that are on better teams, and that is one thing that is very hard to do. But I mean, Devin Booker was so good before he went out. It's just, it's tough. I hate this for De'Aaron Fox because I feel like he might not make it. There could always be an injury replacement type of thing too, especially if Devin Booker's not able to get back in time. Maybe they could use that as a caveat, like, oh, well, we'll select Devin Booker. Maybe the coaches think that, know that he's not going to be able to play. Then they can get De'Aaron Fox in there from Adam Silver's commissioner pick as a replacement. But, you know, I think J.J. Redick brought this up on his podcast talking about, you know, there should be more than 12 guys available for the All-Star game. Now, I personally kind of agree with that. I think it would be interesting to do 15 and 15. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like the league is deep enough with talent that I think you can definitely expand the rosters to 15 and go up to 30 players without really diluting the honor.
Yeah, and that's how I feel too. I don't think players is it built in players' contracts where if they make the All-Star game they get
it can be.
Yeah, which I hate that too because it's so like silly in my opinion, like that we're letting all this randomness affect how someone gets paid. So I think 15 does make some sense. I think it was a good point brought up by Reddick. You know, like there's only like whatever, like 10, 15 teams in the league at the time. So with that being said, I think it's going to be an interesting battle here. And it's always interesting how coaches vote. Have you noticed a trend with how coaches usually vote?
They are not going to reward younger guys is just even how it sort of skews. It's always going to be, I feel like, I don't want to say predictable, but guys with track records is how they're typically going to favor them.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. So that'll be interesting because a young guy like Tyrese Halliburton, he probably won't get the start, obviously, because he doesn't have the votes. But I'm curious how the coaches will vote. I think it should be a shoe-in that he gets in, but I don't know. It's just there's a lot of veteran players in the Eastern Conference as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough. It's like, even if we were expanding it to 30, like there's always going to be tough cuts to make. And a lot of times it comes down to a matter of preference and even just some of the playing time designations I make. They are really sort of arbitrary when you think about them.
Absolutely. So let's move over to the mid-season awards here. I've got the odds. I pulled them up from today and, you know, just kind of seeing where everything's at. Let's start with the big one here, the MVP. The odds are Nikola Jokic -145, Luka Doncic +400, Joel Embiid +900, Jason Tatum +900, Giannis +1300, Ja Morant +3000, and Kevin Durant +4000. For you, who has been the MVP of the season so far?
Yeah, so I actually do a bi-weekly MVP ladder for Bleacher Report, and there's been a lot of movement, but the past 2 or 3 weeks, Jokic has been there fairly comfortably for me at the top, and it feels like he's checking every single box, where when you look at the first time he won, a lot of people were wondering, like, oh, okay, well, like, how is his play going to translate to the playoffs, or is he only winning because the Denver Nuggets are elite enough? Look at the supporting cast he has. And then last year, the criticism was, are we just, giving him a boost because his supporting cast has been injured and not that great? And then this year is just sort of a combination of everything. The bench is starting to play better when he's off the court, but it's been by and large terrible. The Nuggets are first in the Western Conference, and we now have just ironclad proof, regardless of where the Nuggets postseason ended, that Jokic can dominate in the playoffs. And so this is someone who has answered every question, aside from maybe the biggest one of, can he be the best player on a title team? And just the answer to this point is no, because the Nuggets have not won a title. What Luka has done in the face of a very lackluster, limited supporting cast is incredible as well. The usage he's been shouldering, his efficiency on step back threes, some of the things he's been doing in crunch time. But Jokic is really just continues to be at another level. And I feel like, not that people are sleeping on what he's doing, but there's going to be this tendency to discredit it because there's supposed to be voter fatigue. And it's interesting that the betting odds have shifted so much now. I think that's really a nod towards how airtight Nikola Jokic has made his case, that it's even checking more of the conventional boxes where people care about narrative of best player on the best team. He's now entered that conversation. He's also, as of other candidates, benefited from just some injuries, like Steph missing a ton of time. KD is now going to miss a ton of time. Even Giannis has missed some time. We've seen some pullback on the way that he has played. And so I think that's ended up really, turning this into what I think probably winds up being a two-player race between him and Luka. But I think Tatum could probably, just with people who look at the best player on the best team material, that's still someone that I think will have a lot of MVP stock moving forward.
Yeah, those are all excellent points. And, at the beginning of the year, I just felt like maybe this is the year Joel Embiid gets it. And I think he was my preseason prediction. And, every time I predict it, I always get a little bit nervous because I'm not sure if he's going to be able to hold up for the 82-game season and play that. And he's been lights out this year. There's no doubt about it. I think, like you said, Jason Tatum, he's been lights out too. The best player on the best team in the NBA or the Eastern Conference. So, it's great to see, but it's tough to sit here and say that Jokic has not had another MVP level of season. And like you said, the only thing I think that holds him back from probably winning this is if he gets hurt, which he never does, or voter fatigue. And I don't know. It seems like a lot of the media raves about him. I'm sure there's some that are kind of tired of talking about him, but the majority of people have not been able to stop talking about how terrific of a year he's had. So, with, like you said, Luka is playing lights out. His supporting cast is just subpar for sure. the Mavericks have taken a big step back this year in terms of just overall talent, record-wise, stuff like that. But yeah, Jokic, I mean, what the Nuggets have done this year is just fantastic. And I think everybody was expecting them to, you know, once they're fully healthy, to be a legit contender in the Western Conference. You know, last year, I don't think anybody really believed in them as, you know, being able to go far, but Jokic had a great regular season. But once again, I mean, you said it best. You just can't say enough great things about Nikola Jokic. I think he has to be the favorite. And if he doesn't win, I understand why. I mean, there's a lot of great players in the NBA, but I think that it'd be really hard to pick somebody else.
Yeah, and I think, look, one of the ones that I think people sort of focus on is, well, how's it going to look if Jokic, you know, years from now, if Jokic joins Wilt, Bill Russell, and Larry Bird is the third player to win three consecutive MVPs. It's like, it's going to look just fine because Jokic is on track to be an all-time talent. And so that's just another sort of, you need to come at, if you want to pick Luka or Tatum or even Embiid at this point, who I think has made a stronger case for himself after he's returned, okay, make your case for them. But like, you can kind of miss me with some of the approaches that have been used to try and discredit what Jokic is doing this season.
No, you're exactly right. So let's move over now to the NBA Rookie of the Year odds. Paolo Banchero is the runaway favorite, like you said earlier, minus 1,000. Benedict Mathurin plus 800. Jaden Ivey plus 3,500. Walker Kessler plus 6,600. And then Jalen Williams plus 10,000. So that's Santa Clara Jalen Williams on the Oklahoma City Thunder. But curious your thoughts here. Obviously, it feels like Paolo is the runaway candidate here. But just talk to me about why you think he is deserving of this award more than the other guys that are listed on here on the betting odds.
I mean, he's just flashed like long stretches of dominance. He's been better defensively, I think, than people thought. His ability to create, use his body, physical tools when he gets inside, blend this level of force and finesse with his scoring. He's hinted at being able to hit some complicated jump shots, both inside and outside the arc. You can see the flashes of passing from him already. This looks like someone who, granted, we haven't seen Chet Holmgren play this year because he's injured. It looks like somebody who, in hindsight, how is he not the no-brainer number one pick overall? Although maybe he always was with the chicanery that the Orlando Magic pulled leading up to the draft. Everyone thought they were going to pick Jabari, and then it pivoted to him all of a sudden.
Yeah, and you know, I really have loved Paolo Banchero from his days at Duke. I thought he should have been the number one overall pick. I was kind of surprised that the Magic were leaning Jabari Smith at that point. I just thought to myself, Paolo is just a better overall player. Nothing against Jabari, but I just love guys that can be self-creators, and his passing ability is through the roof. So Benedict Mathurin, okay, this is obviously a guy that won Rookie of the Month for October, November, had a terrific month, and then December really had a shooting slump that was so bad from three-point land. I think he was like at 30% or below. So just hasn't really been able to do that, but he's still been pretty dominant as a bench scorer, averaging about 17 points a game. So talk to me a little bit about Benedict Mathurin and the case he has and what it would take for him to maybe pass Paolo for the rest of the season.
I don't know if there's anything he could realistically do. Maybe he could curry favor if he goes on just like a month and a half long heater and his efficiency just goes through the roof. Maybe even during this time while Tyrese Halliburton's out, like, is he able to lead the Pacers now to like some surprise victories like they just had in, what was it, Chicago or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So against Chicago, I think that could help him. Then also, if that sort of spurs the Pacers getting into the playoffs, I do think there are voters that look, oh, this rookie had an impact on a playoff team. And so I think that could probably help him more than anything else. And I do think he's already done a ton of service to himself, because I don't think a lot of people expected his shot creation and shot making to translate this well right away to the NBA. And it clearly has. And it's why he's probably, you know, mentioned in the same breath as a lot of the top other six men of the year candidates.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, what I've always said when we talked about it on our podcast, I've just said that I feel like Benedict Mathurin only wins Rookie of the Year if somehow Paolo gets hurt and Benedict just plays the rest of the year. Like, even if, let's just say Paolo ends up getting an injury, is out for the rest of the year, do you still think he would get the vote?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't know, like, how many, I guess it really depend on, like, what does the difference in minutes played? I think we're only about halfway through the season, a little bit more. So If you're talking about, let's see, they're so close in minutes played right now. Mathurin actually played more than Paolo already. If he's going to end up playing, like, yeah, I think if Paolo didn't play another game, there'd be a good chance for Benedict Mathurin to win it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. It's just like, I'm not wishing that on him at all. I'm just saying that's, to me, like, you know, Paolo's starting. He's like the focal point of the Magic right now, where Mathurin's, you know, the focal point of the Pacers bench. So it's tough
to delineate where it's like, okay, Mathurin has more total minutes played, but it's across more appearances. And that makes you remember that he is going up against a lot of different caliber of players when he's on the court. Like, yes, he sees a good amount of time from what I've seen with like Pacers featured lineups, but like a lot of his primary minutes are coming against what would be considered the opponents, like not their worst players, but it's not always their best players on the court. And so the quality of minutes or the quality of opponent that's on the floor during your minutes, I think that could creep into the discussion as well.
No, and that's a great point. I mean, I was at the Nuggets game when he ended up having like 20 some points in the second quarter. And, you know, they had that second unit, whoever was guarding him, I forget who it was. Well, all of a sudden you see them put Aaron Gordon in to guard him. And I thought, wow, that's pretty big. Aaron Gordon's probably the best defender on perimeter defender anyway, on the Denver Nuggets. And so they're throwing their best at him. And then Mathurin just jab stepped and shot a three right over him. And I was like, okay, it's not even going to bother Mathurin at this point. But speaking of Mathurin and what other award he could win, that is the Sixth Man of the Year award. And so right now, it looks like Russell Westbrook is the favorite at -175. Malcolm Brogdon.
You're like setting money on fire. Go ahead.
What it is. I mean, I tweeted that out today. I just like, they know that there's a lot of Laker fans that are placing a lot of bets on this. A lot of Laker fans all over the world, especially in America. But, you know, everybody loves the Lakers, and Russell Westbrook gets a ton of attention, good or bad. And so I think they're just like wanting people to bet on him because it does make some sense, and he's averaging pretty good numbers. But, you know, the guy that's number two to me makes the most sense for the Sixth Man of the Year, and that's Malcolm Brogdon at +275. You got Norman Powell, Jordan Poole, Benedict Mathurin, and Bobby Portis all in that conversation as well. I don't think you think Russell Westbrook's the Sixth Man of the Year, but I'm curious who you think is.
I would probably lean towards Malcolm Brogdon at this point, but I do think you mentioned, I think, all the names that deserve primary consideration for it. I will say that I don't know if Norman Powell was on that list that you gave, but he was number three.
Yeah.
And then the other one that was definitely not on that list, and I've just been shocked that he is not on more lists, is Malik Monk, who's been great in Sacramento. His, you know, he's shot better on threes in the past, but the damage he's doing inside the arc as both a scorer and a passer, his two-man game with Sabonis is just works really well. And we see time, the fact that he's playing a lot with Sabonis shows you that he's playing like a ton of important minutes. His scoring numbers aren't quite up to, when you go back and look at traditional Sixth Man of the Year winners, like they're most of the time going to score more than 15 points a game. And so that's where he's going to fail to meet the criteria. But that also could mean that Malcolm Brogdon might miss that criteria. Then I think last time I checked, he was under 15 points per game. So someone like a Norman Powell, even a Benedict Mathurin, could benefit from that definition of it. This race, though, I know a lot of people have gravitated, when you look at like the picks articles, towards Malcolm Brogdon. This race feels more open than it being that close to a consensus, though, to me.
Yeah, and if I recall right, the media survey had Jordan Poole as the favorite for this one.
He was like the runaway favorite at the beginning of the year, but he has been I don't want to say he's been terrible, but he has been up and down, and there's been a hell of a lot of down.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I thought. And I mean, that was just recently, that media survey came out. When was that? Like a month ago or about 3 or 4 weeks ago? There was a media survey that came out, and it was like, who would be the next best head coach? It's like Chris Paul, Tyrese Halliburton. It was like random stuff that they were asking a bunch of media representatives from each team. And I think Dustin Dvorak from the Indy Star was the representative for the Pacers that was involved in this. And he came on our podcast, and I don't know who he voted for. I forget on Sixth Man, but Jordan Poole was the runaway for that as well. And I'm just like, really? So I feel like this one's more up for grabs. I'm not sure what it would take for Mathurin to get it. I personally feel like because he's a rookie, it might be something that holds him back from getting it. But
for sure,
he has been so good off the bench this year. It's kind of hard to just turn the eye and say, well, he's a rookie, but he's still averaging 17 points a game. And he's been closing lineups a lot with the Pacers, you know, best five too. So you kind of have to wonder, does that play a factor?
I think it will. And also, if the Pacers end up being like one of the top six teams in the conference, like a lot of the times, and I didn't check this, but it feels like the Sixth Man of the Year comes from not just microwave scores, but microwave scores from really good, like solid playoff teams. And so that's why you could see Malcolm Brogdon for sure. Well, I guess the Clippers have been all over the place, but maybe a Norman Powell sneaking in there, and why I think also Malik Monk might deserve a little bit more credit than he's been getting in this discussion.
Yeah, that's a great point on Monk, because I mean, I've looked at some of the box scores of the Kings games recently, and he hasn't been shooting particularly well, but I think he's kind of the engine for that second unit. I mean, for that Sacramento Kings team, and they've been so good. But let's move on now to the defensive player of the year odds. Jaren Jackson is the favorite at -210. Brook Lopez, Nick Claxton, Bam Adebayo, and Giannis Antetokounmpo are the ones that are following that. Who is your defensive player of the year?
Mine is Giannis. I think a lot of people feel like they're trying to course correct from last year when they voted for Marcus Smart, and like they watched the playoffs and they kind of realized like how limited certain perimeter defenders can be in matchups. I don't necessarily subscribe to the theory that perimeter defenders can't win defensive player of the year, or that non-bigs in general can't. Brook Lopez is incredibly valuable. And he is like, you know, he's like the best rim protector in the game right now. Giannis just does so much more. He's one of the best rim protectors in the game. In addition to being able to really just bust up possessions away from the ball, he can really take on some difficult one-on-one assignments, even though that's not necessarily how the Bucks use him or how he's best used. And Jaren Jackson Jr. has been great. But like, we've seen two Defensive Player of the Year award winners average under 27 minutes per game in NBA history. And the fact that he does foul a lot, which has probably curtailed his playing time, even though some of it is probably he came back from injury. Also, there's been a lot of games where Memphis is just trucking opponents, especially not so much lately, but earlier on. He's been maybe the most impactful defender per minute, but like, sample size has got to matter here. And so I might even be more inclined to go with a Bam Adebayo and a Giannis before I would go towards Jaren Jackson Jr. Maybe that changes, though, because there is still a couple months of the season left to play.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, Giannis is so good defensively. He is just a nightmare, and he's so long, and he can do so many things. And like you said, the Bucks really do have the advantage of going smaller, because they can pull Brook Lopez out and put Giannis out there, but then they can go super big and play them together. Then you got Jrue Holiday out there, who's one of the best perimeter guards, defensive guards in the league. So, you know, that Bucks team is really defensive minded. And I think Giannis probably, I don't know if it's voter fatigue or what it is, but it feels like, you know, he's always in the conversation, but hasn't won the award recently. So Bam Adebayo is another name that I feel like has always been in the mix for this award too, just hasn't got a chance to, you know, take home the honors. But another name that was brought up in here is Nick Claxton. And I've been seeing a lot about Nick Claxton in the year that he's had. What are your thoughts on Nick Claxton?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Defensive player of the year seems like a stretch. He might have an all defense case because they don't care about positions in that context, but it's tough. I mean, the Nets are a lot better defensively than you would expect. I think a lot of that's due to Royce O'Neal's been better than anticipated. Ditto for Nick Claxton. Ben Simmons is sort of come on. KD was great defensively before he got injured. Defensive player of the year is tough. He's had a fantastic year at both ends of the floor, but also just like his minutes aren't really what where you would expect a defensive player of the year to be. And that has to go into like, well, can you have him on the floor? One, they don't like to play him and Ben Simmons a ton, even though those minutes have gotten better. And then two, he's a free throw shooting liability himself.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think Nick Claxton just being in the conversation is the honor that he deserves. But I don't think he's anywhere near the defensive player of the year, even though he has been impactful. Most improved player odds. The favorite here is Lauri Markkanen, -145. Following that is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Brunson, Tyrese Halliburton, and Alperen Sengun. I know you put Lauri Markkanen in your starting five, so if he's your most improved player of the year, I have no doubts that that's a great pick, but I'm curious if it's maybe Lauri or somebody else.
I have Shai, actually. Okay. I think the hardest leap in the league to make is from entrenched star to full-blown superstar. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander went from, it's tough because of how the Thunder shut him down the past 2 years, something like the 25th to 30th best player in the league to the 10th. At this point, like, you get into an all-NBA discussion, and he might have a first-team case, depending on how many minutes some of these guys end up playing. You look at, he's doing a lot of the same stuff he's always done, but it's just at a higher level. Luka Doncic is the only high-volume player who scores more of his baskets without getting assists on them. We've seen him really ramp up the defense. I think the Thunder do a good job of insulating him against really tough assignments, but away from the ball and even on the ball this year, going around screens, there's been a ton more effort there. Some of those chase down blocks we've seen from him as well. And then to be the driving force of an offense that when you're on the court is above league average, despite the fact that, yeah, Josh Giddey's shooting the ball better and Lu Dort shooting the ball better, and you have some intriguing players, the spacing is not good in OKC. Like, even when Isaiah Joe is on the court, like, it's not good in OKC, and he's still being able to drag that offense to respectability is one of the larger feats happening, individual feats happening in the league this season. So I get why people might be gravitated towards something like newer and shiny, like Lauri Markkanen going from just impactful player with the Cavs to all-star, but going from star to top to superstar to top 10 player to it's fringe all-star to all-NBA lock. That is the harder leap to make to me.
Great points. And to be honest with you, Shai has been so good. Like, I haven't really watched a lot of OKC Thunder basketball, but I watched last week when they played the Pacers, and the Pacers got down like 17-1, and the Pacers ended up getting blown out that game. Obviously no Halliburton, but Shai was like a plus 38 in that game, and he didn't even play but like 20 plus minutes. And then I watched the game they played against the Kings, and I think they ended up losing that game, but it was very close. Isaiah Joe like was hitting some big threes at the end to make it a closer game than it probably should have been. But, you know, he was just doing all kinds of crazy things there as well. So I think SGA is a terrific pick for this. To me, there are so many good players that have improved this year. I personally, you know, watching Halliburton all the time, like, you can tell how much he's grown as a player. He's going to probably be an all-star. And I think that, you know, even if Halliburton doesn't win this award, he was a favorite at the beginning of the season. Markkanen came out of nowhere. And, you know, I think my preseason pick was Anthony Edwards as a jump kind of guy.
That's a good one.
And, you know, personally, I think Anthony Edwards probably should be on the betting odds list over Alperen Sengun. But I know Sengun's been okay, but, like, the Rockets are just so bad. It's kind of hard to put a Rocket player on there, in my opinion. But, you know, this is just a really good group. Jalen Brunson taking a big leap from, you know, what he did in Dallas and New York. But like you said, it is so hard to make a case against Shai because of that huge leap that he's taken from just a guy that was on a lottery level team to a guy that's, you know, averaging 30 points a game and doesn't even shoot the three ball at all. Like, he's driving most of the time for his baskets. And so that is huge to me. And he's a great defender as well. I mean, really, you think back and look at that trade that the Thunder made to acquire him in the Paul George trade. I mean, everybody loved the picks, but the best thing they might get out of that entire deal is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And those picks, while they could be really good players, they're not going to ever equal to the amount of what Shai is going to mean to that franchise, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, unless the Clippers win a title, that's going to be just a trade that's relitigated ad nauseum, and it's hard to fault people for doing that. And also, just what you said, like, there are other, like, if someone picked Lauri Markkanen or even Tyrese Halliburton at this point, what makes it tough with Tyrese Halliburton is, like, he's basically just been an extension of how he closed the season. I think he's been even better as a, like, a shot maker and decision maker. So there's definitely that level up, but I'm wondering if that ends up hurting him in the long run. I think regardless, just the leap that we've seen Shea make is just the hardest one to do. But you could also make the case that, well, we've seen him be like ridiculously good, especially in 2020, 2021, when the efficiency was there, while with the self-sustaining offense. I totally understand that too. It feels like there are probably like three really good options for this, but to me, it just feels like Shea's leap is a cut above the ones we're seeing from some other guys.
Yeah, totally fair. And, you know, as much as I want Halliburton to win it from a Pacer standpoint, you know, have no problem if he doesn't. I think if he gets the recognition for the All-Star game and, you know, as a finalist, I think that's great as well. But last one here, Coach of the Year, the odds are Joe Mazzulla, Willie Green, Taylor Jenkins, Jock Vaughn, and Will Hardy. Who would you give your Coach of the Year to right now?
Oh, man. I think I would probably lean towards Will Hardy. Yeah. I'm just like, the Jazz have just come out of nowhere to have that. They had good players on the team, but I don't think anyone thought that they would sort of merge into this product of coherence where they have a top five offense. They're in the playoff hunt. And I think it might hurt him that it does seem like they're going to be sellers at the deadline, but they get buy-in from guys like Jordan Clarkson in a contract year. Mike Conley being on a team that looked like it was rebuilding when, you know, he's in his twilight years, even having a guy like Colin Sexton come in and you're sort of limiting his role as a sixth man, another guy who could be a good sixth man of the year candidate, by the way.
Oh yeah.
You've sort of lower volumed his role when you look at his minutes, but getting buy-in from him, I know he's already been paid, so that might be a little bit easier. What you've done with Lauri Markkanen, no, he's not hitting the same from scratch shots that we're seeing from Tyrese Halliburton, from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but he's in the most improved player conversation for a reason, because there's a scalability to his offense and he can work in so many different ways. What you've been able to do with just sort of your front court rotation and exploring Walker Kessler, the Jazz they've come out of nowhere. I think in part that's because everyone expected them to already blow up the roster like before the season even started. And so there's some like, or to sell the roster since they'd already blown it up. So maybe that needs to be caked in, but like the Jazz play hard and they've like, this is even a team when you look at the players being of a certain quality, they don't necessarily look like they're supposed to fit. Like they're just not really wings on this roster. There's a lot of guards and then like some forwards and then a couple straggler bigs, and they've made it work. And so there's real defensive concerns. They don't have the personnel to defend at a high level though. And so Coach of the Year, I think probably I look at it from like someone who's exceeded expectations, like in a way that we just didn't see coming. And he's that guy. I guess it's tough to view that when you're a rookie head coach and it's like, right, we haven't really seen this before from you. And I do think there's still, you know, there are other guys, I think specifically veterans, that could maybe work their way into this, like Mark Dagnall, who's been on the sidelines now for a couple of years in OKC. I also like wouldn't discount, depending on how Memphis or Denver finish the season, like Michael Malone and Taylor Jenkins. Even just like the Pelicans have been up and down, but like all the injuries, if they're able to come out the other side of this and still be like a third seed or something in the West, you have Willie Green there. And then Mike Brown in Sacramento too. Like that's really a tough one. I think he might be my number two at this point, to be honest. But looking between like Dagnall and Brown and Will Hardy, like those are really like, I guess the primary ones of focus for me right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Mike Brown's probably my Coach of the Year right now, just because of how he's completely came in and just brought a lot of that Golden State culture to Sacramento. The fact that they're the third seed in the Western Conference, like I thought they'll probably make the play-in this year. That was kind of my thinking when I was looking at the Western Conference. I'm like, yeah, I'll give them like the ninth or tenth seed. Like, good young team, don't think they're there yet, but I just talent-wise, they've really just exceeded expectations. And, you know, you talked a lot about like what Will Hardy's doing with this roster that nobody expected to be good and maybe to make some big trades. And, you know, I was kind of wondering, you know, where does Rick Carlisle fall on that? Because I feel like Rick Carlisle has done a terrific job with this Pacers team, that he's playing four guards and Miles Turner in a starting lineup and they're winning a lot of games. And it's just like, he's just doing some interesting things. Like, I don't think very many coaches would have brought their sixth overall pick off the bench like Benedict Mather and not start him, but go ahead and start, you know, another rookie like Andrew Nimhard. Like, I just feel like Carlisle's innovation to really get this roster to where it's at and find the right combinations has been very impressive as well.
Yeah, the stuff they've even done with Nimhard defensively, it's just like some outside the box stuff that I don't know that I necessarily like ever would have ticketed Rick Carlisle for. So he's another one that I think is probably difficult to make too much of a case because of how much it's very clear that like the Pacers, like it's mostly Tyrese Haliburton. I know it's mostly always the players, but when you look at some of these other coaching jobs, I think you can make a case that there's more been done with less because of how good Tyrese Haliburton has been, and even how good Miles Turner has been when he's healthy this year. And I don't know how much that needs to factor into this. And then I also don't know if this is me being guilty of it, but other people as well, like being attracted to something new and shiny, where how many of the guys we just mentioned are either first-time head coaches or relatively new, if not outright new to their situation, including a Jacques Vaughn in Brooklyn, yeah, who's been there, but now all of a sudden he's elevated to head coach after taking over a dumpster fire. Joe Mazzulla being elevated to interim head coach in Boston. And so I'm wondering if the expectations are lower to begin with when you're talking about someone with less of a track record than Rick Carlisle, even if you think that the Pacers roster was either itching for a blow up at the start of the season or just not as good as some of the other teams that we've watched.
Yeah, no, for sure. So let's kind of wrap this up here now, quickly doing your all NBA team. So just hit me with your first team and then we'll just go quickly to your second and your third after.
So my first team is Luka and Shai at guard. I have Kevin Durant and Jason Tatum as my forwards, and then Nikola Jokic as my center.
Okay, so you're not worried about games played at all for Kevin Durant?
As I'm just doing this as of right now. I wouldn't make this predictive. If I had a pick, it's Giannis is probably going to end up there based off games played.
Gotcha. Okay, let's do the second team.
So I have Steph, who could very easily be first team, depending on where he ends up games played. Donovan Mitchell, and my forwards are LeBron and Giannis right now with Embiid at center.
And that's a pretty stacked second team there. I mean, it's been such a crazy year. There's so many good players, and I think there's going to be quite a few guys that are snubbed off the all NBA teams, and that's what makes it really exciting that there's so many good players in the league. But I'm curious now, your third team, who is all on that?
It's funny. So I did fill this out before we got started, and I'm still looking at two blank forward spots on the third team because it's so hard of a choice when you're considering guys who have missed games. Am I going to be able to shoehorn Sabonis in there because the NBA does like all these weird things with eligibility? I think as of right now, I'm going with Pascal Siakam and Zion Williamson. And there's like, the level of dominance from Zion Williamson's minutes when he's played, if he continues to miss time, I think that opens the door for, and I don't know if Bam's going to be eligible there. Like that's the caveat. Would it open the door for Lauri Markkanen? Yes, certainly. Would it open the door for Jimmy Butler? Certainly. But those are my forwards right now. That was tough. I have Anthony Davis as my center, which I actually felt really good about, even though he's missed a ton of time. Rudy Gobert sort of falling off a cliff, I think, has helped a ton. And I don't know that, like, maybe Sabonis, if you want to go off minutes played right now, is someone that you should put in there. That seems like it's going to be AD's biggest competition, though. And then my guards are, this was tough. I went with Tyrese Haliburton and John Morant, with my toughest cut probably being Booker or Damian Lillard. So yeah, like those are the two that were tough to leave off. And even just like guard for third team, like I think the four guards on first and second team are locked. I think it's going to be Luka, Shai, Donovan Mitchell, Steph in that order, unless somebody gets injured again. When you look at the options that there are going to be for the third team guards, just in Tyrese and Ja, Damian Lillard, James Harden coming on, Jaylen Brown, if he's eligible, at guard, there are just options here for days. And I think that even Kyrie Irving is going to definitely sneak his way into that discussion as well.
Yeah, I was about to say, even though a lot of people, myself included, are kind of over Kyrie Irving and what he's done the last couple of years, I think that he still will have voters because he's just a popular guy. And people,
I will say the Nets being not so good when he's running the show without KD probably hurts his case, would be my guess. But we'll have to see how.
No, that's a fair point. I agree with that as well. I mean, he's a totally different guy than he was when he was with the Cavs. You kind of started to see the change in him in Boston a little bit, but he's just a weird guy on and off the court. But he's been pretty good when Kevin Durant's been there. But yeah, I just think Tyrese Haliburton leading the league in assists and what he's done with this Pacers team and the jump he's made, it does make some sense why he should be in that All NBA voting. And it's like, the fact that, you know, you can make the case that he's been a top six guard this year, it's pretty impressive. And, you know, looking in the Eastern Conference, like if you're looking at actual point guards, I've tried to say this without, you know, rose-colored glasses on, but you can make the case that he's the best point guard in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that – I'm trying to think of, like, I guess if you consider James Harden a point guard at this point, Donovan Mitchell's played too much two guard to be in that discussion. So yeah, there's certainly a case to be made that I don't even know. I'm trying to think if I don't want to call it be too spicy and say it's like an uncontested case at this point, but it's a very, very, very strong case.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, Trey Young, like there's
stuff. And Trey Young in a normal year should be there, but he's not there this season. And so you start to run out of options really quickly after that. Darius Garland in a norm, like he's been good this year, but not on the level of Tyrese Halliburton. And also there's the cannibalization of some of the consideration for these players where it's, you look at, you know, Darius Garland seeing his volume and responsibility changing a little bit with Donovan Mitchell there. Ditto for James Harden with things running through Joel Embiid. Like Tyrese Halliburton is just the cap slot guy.
Right. And I think Cade Cunningham going down with the injury early on in the season, like he's always a guy that I think, well, he's the number one overall pick. I know he's kind of like a bigger point guard, but he's still a point guard. And you have to wonder like how impactful would he be? I don't know if he's there yet. But yeah, honestly, there's good point guards, but I would just say Halliburton, just so cerebral. It's hard to think about other guards. And like, this is only in his third year too. So projecting wise, like he's only going to get better. And I think he's really found a home here in Indiana, and him and Carlisle have just been a perfect match for one another.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually impressed with Carlisle, how freewheeling he lets like this version of Tyrese Halliburton and the Pacers at full strength play. And like, I don't watch the Pacers closely enough. Like even when I have watched the Pacers, I promise you, like I'm not looking to see like what Carlisle is saying from the sidelines on these set plays, but it feels like he has just been eminently comfortable, like giving Tyrese Halliburton like absolute agency. And that's just something I think at least nationally people were worried about long-term headed into this year.
You can definitely tell Carlisle has changed a lot from who he was in Dallas with this Pacers team. And it's kind of interesting because nobody expected them to go into this kind of rebuild that they went into. And then he's kind of sped that rebuild up because he's been able to, you know, find the right combinations and you know, just empower this team to be better than they should be on paper. But Dan, this was a lot of fun. There's a lot of things we talked about here, a lot of good NBA content here, and it's good to see and hear your thoughts on that and hear some Pacers mentioned in this conversations. But where can the people find you out on social media? And please plug anything that you have that you put out recently.
Yeah, they can find me at Dan Favale on Twitter, Favale. That's where I'll publish all my work from Bleacher Report. I'm working on, it's going to consume like too many hours of my life through Monday, but there's going to be a huge trade deadline cheat sheet for every single team that will go live. So that'll be packed with goodies on Bleacher Report. And then also, if you have not done so and you're curious to hear more sub-mediocre basketball talk about the entire NBA, I would implore your listeners to check out Hardwood Knox, spelled exactly as it sounds, and we're on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your podcast.
Don't undersell yourself. You're a good basketball mind. I like talking basketball with you, Dan. So don't undersell yourself there. Everybody, go subscribe to the Hardwood Knox podcast. It'll be great stuff, especially as the trade deadline approaches. Going to have plenty of great content over there. But Dan, thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to do it again soon.
Most definitely. Thanks for having me as always, Alex. Take care.
Absolutely. All right. Joining us now on Setting the Pace for our fan of the week, it's Michael Olivier. Man, Michael, thank you so much for coming on. And Fauci's not here to be with us for the fan of the week segment, but I appreciate you filling in and being the representative for our fan of the week. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm in Indiana for the week, so it's been pretty exciting stuff and just trying to enjoy it as best as I can.
I got you. So you're not from Indiana originally?
I am actually from Boston, believe it or not.
Okay, so why are you a Pacer fan then?
Okay, so when I was like in like 2009, 2010, my dad and I were big Fresno State fans, and we were watching Paul George, of course. And being a child, I was like, whatever team Paul George gets drafted to, that's going to be my favorite team. And since then, I've been a loyal Pacers fan.
That's pretty interesting. I'm curious, from Boston, why Fresno State?
Okay, so I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Herron.
Okay, I've heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, he's a Massachusetts native, which he went to school with my dad a few years before him, and they were on the same basketball team. So we've been watching Fresno State for a long time.
I got you. Okay, so that makes some sense. So Paul George, obviously, he leaves the Pacers. Kind of does him dirty a little bit, let's be honest. Says that he wants to win a championship and then asks for a trade. So what were your thoughts when that happened? Did you think about turning in your Pacers fan card at that point, or what happened?
I never. I have it in writing. I will never switch up on my Pacers. I have always said that no matter what happens, how good or how bad we are, I will always ride with the blue collar gold swagger. And yeah, that's
but
how
you,
it is.
But you still rock with Paul George, right? You're still
of course.
Paul George fan. Okay.
That's my favorite player, believe it or not. So okay, I'm still supporting him.
So he's your favorite Pacer of all time too then?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Okay. And that's totally fine because I think Paul George got a lot of fans that are currently Pacer fans into this Indiana Pacers team because they were so good with him. And they desperately need somebody like him right now on the roster. I think he could really help this team, you know, get back to that top Eastern Conference team because he is so good, even though the Clippers have been underwhelming, I would say, for what everyone is expecting. But, you know, is that your Western Conference team then, the Clippers?
So the way that I explain it is if the Pacers are not active or just like not playing, I will root for the Clippers. So like playoffs, the last few years, I was riding with the Clippers. But besides that, I only have one team, and that is the Indiana Pacers.
I got you. So you pretty much rock with the Pacers, and then wherever Paul George is at, you're hoping that his team does well. That makes sense. I mean, a lot of people are like that. A lot of people are fans of players. I'm kind of the same way. You know, there's players I like across the league. It's just like, you know, it's hard not to. I'm a big Sabonis guy. Obviously, everybody knows that. So the Kings are kind of like my second team right now just because I want to see them do well. But let's talk about this year's Pacers team. Who has been the most impressive player to you so far? Not the best, but the most impressive.
Okay. I don't want to be basic, so I'm not going to say Benny. So I think I'm going to go with Nembe. I think Andrew Nembhard has been incredible. Just like the way that he's came into the league as a veteran, playing 4 years in college, three, 4 years, however long he played, he just brought that veteran leadership, believe it or not, to this young team. And it's really helped him as a player. And it's, I'm sure it's helped the locker room as well.
Yeah, you can just tell that his experience in college has translated. He's just a very smart player. I think he's very cerebral, very similar to Tyrese Halliburton. But, you know, he's obviously sick. He's going to miss tonight's game against the Magic when we're recording this, and he missed the game Tuesday against the Bulls. So hoping he gets better. And, you know, you said it was a basic answer, but Benedict Mathurin has been fantastic this year. Really surprising. I don't think anybody expected, number one, for him to be coming off the bench to start the year and pretty much stay there all year. He started about a handful of games, but averaging 17 points a game. Talk to me about what you love about Benedict Mathurin.
I just love the way that he approaches the game, just the way that he instantly, this is the first thing that I always think about. The first time he checks in, the first possession, he attacks a 7-3 center, Kristaps Porzingis, off the glass, a smooth floater, and that just explains his whole play style. He just keeps coming at you, and he won't quit, kind of like this Pacers team.
Yeah, that game, that go-ahead three that he had against the Bulls was just awesome. I mean, he had just really been struggling from outside, and he just shot it with so much confidence, and he just nailed it. He doesn't really care. He doesn't let things bother him in terms of, you know, his shooting slump. Now, he did talk about it on the J.J. Redick podcast that he had been driving a little bit more because the shot wasn't falling, but still was putting up shots. Like, it's not like he wasn't not shooting the basketball, but, you know, he's a shooter. I'm excited to continue to see him grow as a player. But this Pacers team, 24-25, I believe, right now, record-wise, before the Magic game. We're recording this, like I said. So where do you think they end up at the end of the year?
So I have been a supporter of pushing for the playoffs the whole year. I did not expect us to go on a huge 7-game losing streak when we lost Tyrese, but I think that this team is still a playoff team. And with how TJ McConnell has played, if we get Tyrese back and TJ still plays with that same energy and just like he's just been probably our best player down this like last 9-game stretch or however long it's been, it's honestly been so impressive.
Yeah, I mean, TJ McConnell's been fantastic, and I think a lot of people were ready to write him off early on in the season. Nembhard was playing so well when Tyrese was out, everybody was ready to just pass the backup second unit to Nembhard and just push McConnell aside. But McConnell's reminding people why, you know, he is where he is and why the coaching staff likes him so much. But let me just understand like your point of view, because you heard us talk on the podcast before the Nuggets game. I think we released it after the Nuggets game, but we had recorded that before that game and just talked about maybe it would be best for this team to go into the lottery once more. And there's a lot of fans on Twitter that feel that same way, but you said you've always been pushing for the playoffs. So what is your point of view in terms of why you want a playoff run, even if it's just a play-in type of thing, versus getting into the lottery, a top 5-8 pick?
So that's a great question. And I think for me, because I am such a competitive person myself, I never want to see a team tank. And I knew that we had talent across the board with Buddy and Miles on a contract year. So, of course, Miles is going to ball out. And just I knew Benedict Mathurin was going to be good, but I didn't expect this much from him. And I also expected a lot from Aaron Nesmith. And I just feel like the team was built for a gritty playoff run, even before we knew what Nembhard was.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I felt like this team was going to make a trade, and they were going to trade some of their veterans, like you said, Buddy and Miles, and kind of figure out where they're going. Everybody knows that that's where I've been at this whole time. So when we made our regular season predictions, that was assuming those guys would be dealt before the season, probably, or towards the beginning. So that's why I didn't think they'd win that many games, but here they are, you know, they're hanging on for dear life in that play-in spot. But just tell me maybe who has been the most disappointing player to you this season. Go a little negative here.
Okay. I'm usually a positive person, but for me, I think the most disappointing has been Chris Duarte. I honestly have stopped being a believer in him. I know it's early. I've seen stretches where he looks like the player he did last year, but just like you and Fauci talked about, he's not built for this roster. Like, he was built for the slow-paced, melodic with Sabonis and Brogdon, and he was supposed to be that third guy. But he's not somebody who you really want as your shooting guard, especially when you have Benedict Mathurin on the bench. And I just don't think he fits, and I don't think he really knows what his role is. So he's been disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with that when I think that the injury, like everybody thought, maybe he's going to come back. He had a slow start, had that big game against the Nets, and then he had the horrific injury against the Miami Heat. So, yeah, it was a bit of a disappointment, obviously, seeing him go down for so long. And then it looks like he's slowly starting to break out of that slump, and I think he's maybe getting his feet wet again, trying to figure out what he's supposed to do with this team. I would say the only player I think that probably falls in the same category for at least, you know, being up there for most disappointing has got to be Jalen Smith. This is a guy that was starting with this team and then fell to the backup center. And then, honestly, if you go back and watch a Bulls game, split minutes with Isaiah Jackson, and then Terry Taylor kind of got the second half minutes as that secondary big. So you just kind of have to wonder, like, they obviously invested in Jalen Smith. They didn't invest a lot of money, but they invested playing time. And now he's kind of lost his spot in the rotation a little bit. He's just kind of regressed as a player, I feel like, in terms of his role. So what are your thoughts on Jalen Smith?
So I have been saying this also all over Twitter this whole season. I feel like we're still not giving Jalen Smith enough credit for what he was able to do. Because let's be honest, we expected him to be our fourth option, maybe our third scoring option. But then when you get Benedict Mathurin scoring 17 a game, and you get everybody else chipping in, scoring 10, 15, it's hard for somebody like Jalen Smith to really find shots. And I feel like when he gets a lot of shots, despite the three-point shooting, it's been disappointing, but I feel like he's still effective when he gets a lot of shots. Like, we've seen games where he's had 23. We had a game where he had like 18 in one quarter. Like, he showed flashes all year. I just don't think he's getting consistent touches. And as a young player, that's going to take confidence away, and he's not going to really be as invested or engaged as you would want him to be.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing too is, like, he's more of a five than he is a four. A lot of people have had different opinions on that. I know Bob Kravitz thought he was more of a power four than a five when we had him on in the offseason. And, you know, there's some people that thought maybe he could play the four. He played it okay, but I think it's just he's more of a five, natural fit as a five. And you're right. I think that they kind of pigeonholed him with that starting lineup into the Miles Turner role. When Miles Turner was playing alongside Sabonis, he was kind of that afterthought, basically just be a stretch big, and that was that. Now, I do think that Jalen Smith is still a solid rebounder and a good rim protector as well. Now, he's not Miles Turner-level rim protection, but he's still a pretty solid rim protector. So I'll be interested to see what they do with him moving forward, because Isaiah Jackson's a guy that they're really interested in as well. But I'm going to open the floor for you. Number one, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask me, maybe from something I've said on the pod? Or number two, do you have like a hot take you want to share?
All right. I'll do a question. And I don't have any hot takes because I've been sticking with the same playoff push all year. But okay. My question for you, Alex, is if you are all in, like you've said, with OG Anunoby, and you want them to make a move for that wing. How much is too much to give up?
Yeah, so I think Focci's actually been more all in with OG than I have been. Yeah, I like OG Anunoby, and I've been getting a lot of questions about OG Anunoby on my social media, whether it's in like comments or just messages. And it's like, you got to remember, the biggest thing here is OG is a free agent at the end of 2024. So whatever you trade to get him, you're going to have to trade a lot. Right now, it is a seller's market. You're going to, you know, pay an arm and a leg to get him here. Now, I like the idea of him being here, but at the same time, he's got to promise that he's going to re-sign, because if you don't get that re-sign done, then you just maybe traded away a lot of really valuable assets for a guy to leave you after 1 year. You know, this is not the Kawhi Leonard type of trade that the Raptors did to win a championship. No, this is OG Anunoby. This is a guy that's had injury problems throughout his career. He's never been like a prominent scorer. He's had moments where he's looked really good as a scorer. He's a good defender. I think he's probably still a B-level player. I don't see OG Anunoby as a superstar or an all-star level player right now. So the asking price for what they're going to want from him is, in my opinion, going to be more than the Pacers should give up. Now, if for some reason the Pacers could offer a very fair deal, in my opinion, where they're not giving up as much, and the Raptors are like, okay, this is pretty fair, like kind of similar to what we saw with Haliburton and Sabonis, like that type of a move, right? I think I would be more intrigued to do it, but I just don't feel like it's a good match for us with a trade partner because of what Toronto has done so far in their NBA career. Masai Ujiri is a terrific GM, and I think he's made some great moves, and this does not seem like a move that he would make with the Pacers, you know, because their asking price, unfortunately, when I've talked to people that cover the league, they're saying, well, if you don't throw Benedict Mathurin in this, you're not getting OG. And I'm like, well, that's not going to happen. So who else do you have? I mean, really, if you look at this roster, we like players on it, but are they really like worth OG Anunoby? Probably not. And then I'm just not a fan of giving away my picks for that type of a player yet.
That's fair. And I actually agree with you. That's kind of why I was wondering, because yeah, I forgot that it was Focci who was more all aboard the LG Anunoby train. But I don't know. Do I have time for one more that I could ask you?
Ask me another one.
Okay. So what is your number one ideal target for this team right now?
Well, my ideal target is to lose as many games as possible and get the best draft pick possible. That's my ideal target, because I think this draft class is loaded. If they can get a top five pick in this year's draft class, I'll be happy with whoever they take. I mean, the top five is so loaded, in my opinion. So, you know, you got Amen Thompson, you got Cam Whitmore, even Amen's brother, which I don't think he's top five, is Assar Thompson. He's going to be really good. Jairus Walker from Houston, I really like him as a player. Now, I don't think he's a top five pick, but he's in that top eight range. And Brandon Miller, of course, is another guy. It's like any of those guys I would be thrilled with. Now, if you're looking at a player to trade for, I mean, OG is a typical player that you like that type of player. I think Jonathan Kuminga is somebody that I would look at. And if you remember last year, I was really big on Shaedon Sharpe.
Yes.
The Blazers, in my opinion, have come out, so they're trying to win now with Damian Lillard. Are the Blazers stupid enough? Now, I don't think they are, but they could be stupid enough, like the Kings were, to give up Haliburton. Maybe you call the Blazers and try to get Shaedon Sharpe in a package to take on some of their bad contracts, like a Nurkic's contract. I think he's got 4 years left. And maybe you take on some bad salary, but you have to take Sharpe as that sweetener, and you give them like valuable players that you have, like a Turner. Maybe if they'd rather upgrade at center with Miles, and throw in Chris Duarte, who's a lottery pick last year, and then maybe throw in somebody else if you really feel like it, or a pick or two. So I feel like maybe taking a risk on somebody like that can make sense, but at the same time, don't know if Portland does that. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I want to find a guy that's not on an expiring deal that could make some sense at that three or the four. And if you're looking like one guy that I've really been talking about a lot on the Hornets, not PJ Washington, but Jalen McDaniels, I think, you know, a low buy, he's somebody that I'd be interested in just to kind of see what he could do. But right now, I just don't really know who's out there that could be really had that's in that upper echelon. Now, free agency wise, is a guy that I talked about a little bit, Cameron Johnson from Phoenix, restricted free agent. I think someone like that could be interesting.
Cam Johnson, that's interesting. I do agree with Jalen McDaniels. But yeah, we'll see. I was also big on Shaedon Sharpe, so I understand that mindset.
I cooled off a little bit. You guys know that. But I just think the best way to really approach this is through the draft. You know, maybe for some reason, if the Hawks blow their thing up, you go after DeAndre Hunter. He could be somebody. Obviously, John Collins is a name everybody throws out there. I don't dislike John Collins. I think he could actually be utilized better here. Just not in love with John Collins. He's a like guy, not a love guy. So that's it for me, for my answers there. You have any more questions before we wrap it up?
That's all set. Thank you.
Yeah, man. So go ahead and tell the people where they can find you at on social media, and you know, let them know anything that you have that you'd like to share.
Okay, so on Twitter, I am Michael21201 underscore. My Instagram is the same thing, Michael21201 underscore. Those are the main social media apps that I use. And that's pretty much it. I dabble with podcasting. So I have a podcast on Spotify, The Mikey O Show, but it's more general where I just talk about my life. So that's not really a plug, just something that I like to do.
No, that's a plug, man. Check out The Mikey O Show. I'm excited. I'm going to check that out. I'll give you some feedback on it. You know, you're listening to our show. I owe you the respect to go give your show a shot. But you know how we close this thing out here with Focci giving me a Let's Go Pacer. So since he's not here today, we're going to leave it up to you. So I'm going to ask you, Mikey O, if you're hoping the Pacers make a deep playoff run this year, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers.
Setting the pace, going to the top. Setting the pace, going to the top. This is your number one podcast. Sweeping every team, we gonna need a mop. Smooth.